thinking.
Well, we've talked about a few things about which we'll come on to later.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you're going to think this is really weird, or and you've gone, no, that's, no, and I you've don't. Said what it is. And like for me, it's felt like quite an odd thing to maybe do. And I've always had these thoughts and done these things, but there's a name for it and it's a thing.
Lots of people do it. And now everybody's going to be really curious to know what is this thing.
You'll have to keep listening.
Wait till the end.
Welcome to the At The Bench podcast, Talks At The Bench. Your hosts, Andrew and Louise, are passionate about business, so much so that they cannot stop talking about it. Out for a walk, over dinner, in the pub. So grab yourself your favourite drink, settle down and join them for a chat after the cameras stop rolling.
Attitudes and awareness have improved vastly in recent years, but there are still a lot of unanswered questions and general misunderstandings around mental health, what it is, what it isn't, misconceptions, the causes and the misconception that something awful must have happened before it can be real. What's your...
Okay, well, the charity Mind describes mental health as something we all have, just as we have physical good health or ill health. We can have mental ill health or good health. So when people say, I got mental health, well, yeah, we all have. But, it's the same as being physically ill or physically well.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we're in good mental health, we're able to cope with the stresses and strains of life. But our mental health can be affected by many things, such as our environment, our job, life events, and we all deal with things differently. So two people can experience the same traumatic event. One will suffer badly, the other won't. That's all normal.
I think COVID was a really good example of that.
Yeah.
Some people just seem to breeze through and some people enjoyed the time that they had off, didn't they? Which is perfect. Yeah. There's no right or wrong way to
have approached it.
But then other people really struggled.
Like overwhelmed and
normally
anxious,
I'm a worrier, but COVID didn't faze me. I didn't like it, but I wasn't overly concerned.
You coped well with it, relatively well compared to some
other
people.
Things.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So you said about misconceptions. So yes, there are many misconceptions about mental health. And one of them is that if somebody has anxiety or depression, then they're flawed or weak in some way.
Mm.
And that is just not true. And, I have to say that with a big capital not true. Because the person struggling with their mental health is showing strength that people who don't struggle can't understand. Each day is a battle, but somehow they manage to show up despite negative thoughts, sleep deprivation. You know, it sounds bad, but it's actually worse than anything I could ever describe for some people.
There are so many factors which can affect mental health. We'd be here all night trying to cover them all. And there's sometimes no obvious reason at all. But are there any common causes or triggers?
Yeah, and you are right that sometimes there isn't an obvious reason. But there are common causes. And there can be social isolation, as you mentioned about COVID, when people were isolated during COVID. Loss of job or relationship. Bereavement. Workplace stress. Loss of your physical health. So those are all things that jump to mind immediately then.
Yeah. But obviously it's very broad, isn't it? But do you think genetics plays a part in it?
Well, research done by Oxford University in 2020 suggests that there might be a genetic link, but there are no tests yet available to verify it. And my understanding from what I've read is that depression and anxiety might run in families, possibly because as children, we are influenced by our caregivers.
Mm.
For example, if you have an over-anxious caregiver, then that's the kind of behaviour we follow. So, say our mothers or dads are a little bit anxious and don't want us to do dangerous things like ride a bike or whatever, or then we start to look at the world as a scary place.
Right.
And the thing about the genetics is that, yes, there may be a genetic cause, but it takes a stressful event to switch the gene on.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But it's interesting with you said about the nurture rather than nature, because your father, Andrew, is a very positive person,
always
isn't
positive,
he? He's 100 now, and he read a lot of self-help books in probably the 70s and 80s, I would think, when there was a real boom in self-help, I think, at that time, wasn't there?
Yes.
And I think a lot of that is positivity has filtered
he's taken
down.
He's on board.
He stayed with him, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think that's why you were like you are, with your positivity and your positive thinking.
Yeah, I think it does with us, because I was brought up with that.
That's how he's always been, how you've known him.
And you always laugh when I say, my father used to look in the mirror and say, every day in every way, I am getting better and better. And you launched it. Ah, that's Frank Spencer said that.
Well, I didn't know it was a book. I didn't know it was from...
But it was. There was a lot of self-improvement going on.
He'd read books, like, it didn't really work on him.
Friends and Influence.
That's a good one, yes. Is that Napoleon or something to do that? And he also, Grow Rich While You Sleep.
Yeah.
That hasn't worked, unfortunately, for him. He didn't pay attention to that. Yeah. But he's always been hello, happy, cheery.
It's his mindset, isn't it?
He has a very positive and open mind when it comes to that. And I think being, as you say, being with that environment growing up, that has rubbed off. Mm, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm. Your prime example, really. Yeah. You
and I'm always looking forward to things, and I try not to dwell on... I know perhaps is it a good thing, is it a bad thing? I don't know. But I always try and look at the positive in things. If there's perhaps some negative things, I try and suppress them.
You do sometimes ostrich. But then I very often will... You think I look at the negative side of things, but then a lot of the time I'm future planning and I'm risk assessing and I'm looking to mitigate risk.
Yes.
For me, that's good for me, because then I can relax once I've worked out a plan.
It'd be different if you couldn't execute your plan because you kept changing it all the time, then that could be a problem, you know, if you never thought it was good enough.
Once I've got the plan, I stick to the plan, and that's that.
Like your dad, I do think you can change the way you do react to things. Mm. Not that, you know, it's impossible to be positive about everything.
Of course
it is. Mm. You've had a good example from him then.
He does live well.
He's got to 100, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the stigma around mental health issues. What forms can this take, and how do you think this is making the whole issue worse?
Yeah, and because wherever we say that stigma is not so bad, it still is.
Mm.
And people tend to hide how they're feeling due to shame and fear of judgment from others, because we all fear that others may see us as weak, unreliable, mad even, whatever mad means.
Mm.
People feel their problems are too small to bother their GP with or to contact a counsellor. So they prolong their suffering because they resist going for help for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, having a mental health problem like anxiety, depression, also, you know, all the other stuff, it feels shameful.
That's where a specialist counsellor can really help, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's interesting you said about people feeling like their problems are too small to bother or bother the GP, or, you know, you feel like you're managing with it but still struggling. Mm. But then somebody said something to me a few years ago and it's always stuck with me. If your house caught fire, God forbid, you wouldn't wait till it was burnt down before you called the fire brigade. You'd put the fire out, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same with this, I think.
It's shame, a lot of it is, not wanting to admit. And I'm not realising that there is help there, I think.
But we've talked about a few things about which we'll come on to later.
Yeah.
And I've said, well, you're going to think this is really weird. And you've gone, you've said what it is. And for me, it's felt like quite an odd thing to maybe do. And I've always had these thoughts and done these things, but there's a name for it and it's a thing.
Lots of people do it. Oh, now everybody's going to be really curious to know what this is.
You'll have to keep listening.
Wait till the end.
So warning signs and signals, like you say, we ignore these through shame and for lots of other reasons. So are there any warning signs or signals that we can actually look out for to help prevent things from spiralling or escalating?
Well, yeah, we can, Louise, but a lot of them, they happen to a lot of people, and so it is really difficult. But I'll give you a few anyway. So feeling tired or drained most of the time, not just on Friday night. You know, every day is a struggle. Feeling helpless, trapped, defeated. You know, can't go on, can't do it anymore. Feeling detached, alone in the world. Having a cynical, negative outlook. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, but thinking that everything's rubbish, procrastinating and taking longer to get things done, and feeling overwhelmed, that's a really big one, I think, feeling overwhelmed. And, you know, and as I say, we all have those feelings every now and again, but it's when we're getting them on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's when you need to start looking. And we ignore them because they creep up on us insidiously, And unless we know what to look out for, before we know it, we're overwhelmed.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, yeah, early signs, feeling tired all the time, irritable, cynical, using the word I a lot, as in, I can't see an end to this. I'm always doing everyone else's work.
Mm.
Reluctance to start a task, reluctance to get out of bed on a daily basis. Not just on Monday morning then.
Yeah. Is there a way that we can prevent it?
I'm not entirely sure, in my own opinion. But if we can be aware of the signs in the early stages, it might be possible to stop them getting worse. So if we start to feel overwhelmed, it's important to take a break. Do all the simple things, like getting outside for fresh air. And one really good way, and I do this with clients sometimes when they're feeling overwhelmed and they find it really helpful, and I do myself, is doing a mind dump with pen and paper. And I think it's really important to use an actual pen and paper rather than your phone. And just write everything down that's on your mind. It doesn't matter what order, just words. And a lot of the time you start to think, gosh, it's not that bad actually, all these things I've got to do. I can see, I can make sense. I can make sense of it. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And that really does work for me. It doesn't look so bad once I've put it all down on paper. As I say, sometimes when we see it written down, it doesn't seem so big. And then a big one, scheduling non-negotiable time off. We talked about this briefly in the last one with imposter syndrome, didn't we?
Yeah.
So make a date in your diary and stick to it. Just as if you were going to the doctor. So you're not going to cancel it. Well, you might cancel it, but you wouldn't, or having your hair done or whatever. I'm looking at Andrew, not Louise. So, and stick to it. Yeah, no, that's my day I am having today. I've picked this one thing.
Yeah.
But that could be, I'm sitting in the garden all day in my deck chair.
Mm.
Or I'm working on this piece of work that I want without thinking about all the other stuff that's going on. I'm breaking it down into smaller chunks, looking at what's really important and what can wait.
I think prioritise.
That's with everything. That's with work, your house. You know, if you're going up the stairs and there's fluff on the stairs, and you've got 101 other things to do, just think, it can wait.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere, is it?
It's not going anywhere, no.
Mm.
Instead of letting it get you really stressed out, like, oh, God, I've got to do this, I've got to do that.
It's hard though, isn't it?
Today, I've booked myself in my deck chair outside, or I have decided that nobody is going to interrupt me, I'm not going to answer the phone.
Does that get easier the more you do it, do you think?
Yeah,
definitely. Because I was just thinking the idea of having fluff all over the living room floor. Or...
Not forever, Louise.
No. No, yeah. I'm not vacuuming again, Mary Toby, I don't have to.
Not forever. Not if on that day you've booked yourself something in, such as a project you're working on.
Oh, right, okay.
But yeah, you've got to think, you can wait till tomorrow, and maybe you can wait, you know, a couple more
the day
days.
After.
Exactly.
Mm. Okay.
You know, you won't go to leave it forever and ever.
Okay.
All right.
Right, okay. That makes sense. Do you think that the therapeutic effects of something like making jewellery or creativity in general is beneficial to mental health?
Oh, definitely. Because being creative, doing something you enjoy, puts you in a state of flow, you know, F-L-O-W, which can be very enjoyable, even euphoric, because you lose yourself. And it's a bit like when you were a child and you lose a sense of time, when you were in a game or drawing or painting with your paints. You know, you were just happy and didn't think of anything else going on. And you probably do have moments of that now, but probably not as many as when you were a child. And it's thought that being creative uses the whole of the brain. And whilst there are two different parts of the brain, the theory that we are predominantly right or left brain is a myth. And I had to get that in because it drives me crazy when people say it. And it is possible to train ourselves to be more creative.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which in turn is very good for our well-being.
Wow, that's interesting, isn't it?
Well,
if you think you're not a creative person, you actually could be...
Well, it doesn't mean you're going to be, you know,
Picasso,
a great artist.
The next Picasso.
But, you know, say you... instead of focusing on everything's got to be tidy, because I think that kills creativity, doesn't it, when you've got to have everything tidy first.
Yeah, or let's show you my pot.
Okay.
Because, speaking of things not being tidy, you just jogged my memory.
Yeah. I lost my train a bit.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
But that's something, like you were saying, you've got something that is different to what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
That involves a bit of creativity, a bit of thinking, planning, and then you've got some expression, with your pots at the end of it. It's very good, but it's that, but it's that creativeness.
You were absorbed in when you were doing it.
Blooming laughter, yeah.
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 I don't know how you train yourself to be more creative.
Perhaps you do something on a bit of a regular basis.
I think, yeah, it's like even with social media, and I know we're not supposed to be talking too much about work, but the social media, when you start doing it, that's a form of creativity, isn't it? Because you have to write creatively.
Yeah.
And that does get easier
yeah,
as
definitely.
Time goes on.
And, I agree. Your brain is more tuned into what you need.
Yes.
Even Louise doing this for you, I could feel my brain was working better on it than it was before.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes, I think you just... I might be talking a load of rubbish here, but I think
you're not.
Yeah, I think you are opening up those pathways in your brain then, your neural pathways.
Mm. Yeah. So what if your passion or your hobby becomes your job?
Mm.
For many of this, you know, it's a dream, isn't it? But do you think this can cause problems, and how can we overcome the problems? How can we make sure that we aren't overdoing it? Because I know I've been guilty of that, working too hard and not noticing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes, like, we've worked till 10 o'clock at night, haven't we? Mm. And then by the time I finish work, I'm that tired. I feel perhaps a little bit resentful that I've worked for so long, which is silly, but because it's been my choice. Or worse still, you know, we start to enjoy it less and less as time goes on if we're overdoing things.
Yeah.
And the thing that we loved so much, we suddenly start to not love as much. That's the danger, isn't it?
I've heard of people starting to absolutely hate the thing they loved because it starts to become a chore.
Yeah, how can we stop that happening?
Yeah, so, well, first of all, I'd like to say, if your passion becomes your job, the saying, and I'm sure you've heard this, choose a job that you love and you will never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's a lovely daydream.
It's a bit cheesy.
Great idea for a cross-stitch tapestry to go on your wall or print it on your mug. Okay, but in reality, it is not true.
Mm.
And it could even contribute to mental health problems and burnout.
Yeah.
Because the saying can cause shame and guilt for people who have become bored with their passion.
Yeah.
And shame and guilt for those who've never taken the leap. You know, somebody who's fed up in their job and, you know, people are saying to them, oh, well, if you find something you love, oh, well, it won't be a chore going to work. Mm. And so they're thinking, I can't find that. So there's all that shame and regret then that they never found something that they love. When it starts to feel like work, which it will, if you're trying to make money from it, we start to think, I've made a big mistake. This isn't really my passion.
Yeah.
Because I'm fed up with it now. Yeah.
Mm.
So to overcome these feelings, it's important to remember that even doing what we love involves long hours, which is what you've said, deadlines, the need to earn a living, and that sometimes we're going to have the Monday morning feeling or feel exhausted by Friday, regardless of whether we love what we do.
Do
you ever get that feeling?
Yeah, occasionally. I don't get like a Monday morning or I don't want to go to work. No. I mean, we're fortunate that, well, I think we're fortunate that we work together, so...
Mm. Oh, yeah, totally.
But then equally for me, it's like stopping at a certain time. So, I mean, I can't remember the last time we worked till 10 o'clock at night. It's been a long, long time.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it doesn't work for me.
Mm.
I can't work like that. No. I get...
So you know, you are aware that you need that cut-off time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually finished by 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at the latest, because otherwise I just get...
Yeah.
Miserable. Not miserable, but perhaps resentful.
As you said before, that when you've lost time and been there till 10 o'clock doing something with beads, then you suddenly think, oh, I missed all those hours and I could have been going for a walk in the...
No, it's like putting things on the website. It's like updating the website and things like that, which I just...
Which is work, isn't
it? Which I kind of have in my head that has to be done now, has to be done. Mm. All of it has to be done right now today because I've set myself that deadline. And then I just sit there and do it till it's done. But then I'm cross with myself.
Because
I haven't had a break.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous because I could have just stopped.
Yeah. So even though you love the thing that you do,
the
stuff that's attached to it can sometimes be very tiring.
Yeah.
It's necessary, isn't it?
So it's perspective, isn't it, really, I suppose, is the answer to that.
But on the flip side of that, I could quite happily sit on work until 10 o'clock
and you don't feel
and I wouldn't feel
resent or
no
I wouldn't feel resentful at all. It's just
I said, two people can experience the same thing
but
feel differently,
so there's no right or wrong then, is there? It's just finding the best way for yourself.
If you are getting overwhelmed, we'll have a look at how long you are working for. As I say, it doesn't affect you, Andrew.
No, but and sometimes it is too easy to keep working. But I was saying, today, I wish I had more time, and the only time that I can get to do what I want to do is in the evening. But I know as soon as I start to do that, family life is going to suffer.
Yeah, because your relationships you still can start to suffer. Yeah. No, but it's important if you want your relationships to thrive as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it would suffer. So I now, even though I could carry on working, I do make sure that I do have a cut-off point. And sometimes, you know, when you pop out, perhaps you do your pottery, perhaps I'll pop on the computer and do some work. But always make sure that when you come home that I am not working.
I'd rather you went out on your bike or lay in the garden or...
I do. I have done things like that. But then things have needed to be done, and I've done them. Otherwise, it would encroach into the day, which means I'd be behind. So if I do find a little bit of time to do something...
But if you're managing that, Andrew, and it's working well for you, and you're not overdoing it every day, every evening, and it's working, then there's no one to tell you that that's wrong, is there?
No, exactly.
No. Only if you notice that... Other things are starting to suffer.
Yeah, as you say, if like the grass is up to your waist and the paint's peeling off the windows and that sort of thing,
your
wife's
shouting up the stairs.
Yeah, exactly. So no, so I am very aware nowadays, and I do definitely try to have a cut-off point, which I think is better for me. I feel so much better now.
Because you enjoy it. I feel the same with myself. I will research for hours and hours in the evening, but sometimes I would like to just sit down and watch a box set without.
Do you feel guilty when you're watching that box set though, because you feel like you should be researching?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think I haven't done that.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel when I've got things that I could be doing, but I'm not doing them. But you can't be working all the time.
No, you can't.
Sorry, I'm taking over a bit now.
No, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. Mm. Yeah, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
So, how can we manage stress and manage our mental health as a business owner or if we're self-employed?
Okay, well, this is something I have given a lot of thought to lately. So it's finding something that's nothing to do with your business, something that gives you meaning and helps you relax outside of work. So I feel it's important to plan when you're going to take breaks for the year ahead, because in the first year of my business, I didn't. The only days I had was when I was ill. I realised... that. I know that never happened to you, Andrew. I took my leave then, but it was only when I was forced to, because I felt unwell.
Yeah.
So this January, I have actually planned in my annual leave for myself.
That's good.
So, and I think it's important, especially you as well, to have a break every few months, interspersed with the odd day off here and there, just to do nothing some days, or go to see something, or got for a meal, anything. So yeah, I think it's important to do something totally unrelated to your business in your time off, and well, that is for me, and it gives my brain a much needed rest.
Yeah I like that idea, Andrew.
I did actually do it unintendedly the week before last. I didn't think about work, and it was really lovely, and I feel really fresh this week.
Oh, that's good.
That's what we sort of planning this year. We had a week's break in March, and then I made sure then a couple of months later there's going to be another break, and then a few months later we're going to have another break again.
So
over the past few years, obviously with the pandemic, we haven't been able to do that, but I've made sure that I really want to travel, I really want to see the world, and we had a fantastic time on our holiday back in March, a week off, and I literally did nothing, and it was not like me.
But it doesn't have to be going away, is it? It can just be taking that time off.
And that brings me very neatly to something that I've written that I was talking about with a friend the other day, and that's about we don't have to go to far-flung places all the time to find awe, that word awe. So there's a lovely article I've been directed to in The Guardian, and I'm not going to read it all out, but maybe you could put the link to it for people.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So it's about how we need to cultivate awe in our lives by finding awe in everyday things.
How are you spelling awe?
A-W-E, as in awesome.
Ah, right. Oh, sorry.
No, not I in awe.
I thought you were like...
Oars. Rowing.
Sorry.
Awesome.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, I do now. Sorry,
I'm not making fun of you.
I got left behind then, sorry.
So, yeah, by finding it in everyday things, because It can be done anywhere. You don't have to go to Machu Picchu, although I'm sure it's very nice, but I have seen that everybody's just shuffling in a queue behind and all of that, so I'm not travelling all that way to stand up and Machu Picchu. Feel awestruck.
Yeah.
When I can walk up there, you know, where I go, and I feel awe every time I stand there and look around at the Lower Rhymney Valley.
Yes.
I do.
Well, it is lovely, though, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. So it's just finding your own awe then, isn't it, I suppose?
I do love going places, but I don't have to be striving for, I must go here, I must go there. Mm. You know, look at the clouds, nature programmes. Mm. I know, do you ever watch, like, David Attenborough? And especially on big tellies now, it's fabulous. The tellies we've got. So, yeah, it's shifting awareness from ourselves and our busy everyday lives.
Yeah. Just finding your own bit of awe, wherever that may be.
Yeah.
Mm.
In
I love
every,
that.
No, like the weather we have in now, I think is awesome.
Yeah, well, it is. That. That's what we say, isn't it? Yeah. Thinking about anxiety as a form of mental illness, is it different for everybody? Because I don't experience panic attacks, or I haven't in the past, but periodically, you know, this is my thing that I do, periodically, I sometimes notice that I set myself like it seems like a meaningless challenge now that I say it out loud, but you know, like when you say I'm not going to step on the cracks in the pavement, but I don't know, it's even more mundane than that. So I'll think, for example, if I unload the dishwasher before a song finishes on the radio, I'll avoid catastrophe. If I fail, something specifically catastrophic will happen. And I know it's silly, but I can't help doing that race against the time to do the thing to stop the catastrophe. And I think it's probably when I'm anxious and maybe a little bit stressed. I mean, have I just told you something really strange?
No,
or
not at all. No.
I've never even told Andrew that before.
Yeah, no. That is something that we all get. We probably don't even realise it, that we're doing it. And it's called magical or superstitious thinking.
Wow.
So logically we know touching wood, saluting a magpie or similar won't stop bad things happening. And it's considered normal, as most of us have some little rituals that we do to make us feel safer. It can be a problem if we strongly believe that something bad will happen if we don't do those things. It can start to interfere with our happiness and stop us doing things. For example, if you didn't unload the dishwasher before the end of the song, for the rest of the day, you might be on high alert for bad things to happen during the day. And yeah, anxiety does show itself in all sorts of different ways. Some people will have full-blown panic attacks, which are horrible. And other people will have a constant sense of unease that something awful is about to happen, which is exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, it's like constantly trying to set yourself challenges.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could, I'd say, try a little experiment with yourself. It's like, I won't unload the dishwasher before the end of this song. And just have to see what happens.
I've never even considered that as an option.
Yeah, because if you were having counselling with me, I might suggest that to you, that you try and experiment for yourself.
Well, I'm going to try that. So what if you are caring for somebody who's struggling with their mental health? For example, I've had close family members with mental health issues, and I feel like I've really let them down because I didn't notice early enough, or even at all, until they've had to mention it. Can't believe that I didn't know that it was going on.
Louise, it is sometimes difficult to notice when someone's struggling with their mental health, because lots of people internalise and they're very good at putting on a public face for fear of being judged by others. So there are signs that you can look out for. It's just lack of interest in things that people used to love, getting more angry than usual, not engaging, not, you know, self-isolating, not wanting to go out. In the workplace, you might notice that a member of staff is off sick a lot. There's substance misuse, drinking alcohol more than usual. And a lot of those things people do anyway, but those are the sort of things to be alert for.
So it's just sort of out of character things, I suppose, is it?
But it's difficult, and I don't think you need to blame yourself at all that you didn't notice. Because people are really good at masking. No, it's a shock when you realise somebody's been struggling and you didn't notice. And then when you look, you think, oh.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
Some people are very, very clever at hiding.
Yeah, they are.
And it's behind closed doors then that
Yeah,
they show themselves
in. That's right.
Yeah.
Mm. So how do you approach the issue if the person hasn't asked for help, but you're concerned or worried for their mental health?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't force someone to talk if they don't want to, but you can let them know you've noticed they haven't seen themselves. And if they want to talk, you will listen. Or if they'd like help, you'll help them to find it. And by listening, I mean really listening, not giving advice, not telling them what you do in their situation.
Mm.
Because you really don't know. Because you are not the one suffering from depression or anxiety. So when we give advice or too much reassurance, it can make someone feel like you're making light of it or minimising what they're feeling.
Mm.
Now, when someone says, smile up, it might never happen.
Mm.
You know, when you're really worried about something.
Yeah.
Or as someone once said to me, oh, when I'm feeling depressed, I tidy out a drawer. You know, if only was that easy.
Help, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, you know, I would, well, God, my drawers would be so bloody tiny. Yeah. That doesn't mean I'm always feeling depressed, but yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, if that was that solved it.
As easy as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird, isn't it?
Exercise is supposed to be good.
Exercise, yeah. I do think so, but then you can't exercise all day, can you?
Not all day, but
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I do know. I think
because we start the day, we're in the gym, and when I don't go into the gym, I can feel myself.
Yeah.
Sometimes, not argumentative, but a bit on edge, perhaps. Yeah.
Exercise is recommended.
Yeah.
Even if, like I said, just getting outside and go for a walk.
Yeah.
Even if it's pouring with rain.
Yeah.
Just getting out there and smelling the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So I do enjoy that.
Just movement. Mm. Movement.
Yes.
With regards to the role of counselling, my fear is that my counsellor might think I'm nuts or not bad enough to need counselling.
And that's really common.
Yeah.
Common reason for people not seeking counselling, and that's what a lot of people say to me in the first session. So I can tell you that your counsellor will not think you are crazy. We've been trained to listen without judgment. You'll be able to talk about whatever you want in confidence and without fear of being overheard. No problem is deemed too small. In fact, it's better to get help before the problem becomes bigger.
Mm.
As you said before about letting your house go on fire and not stopping it when it's
one room. Just let it burn to the ground and then trying to put it up then is too late. The people that I know who have overcome serious mental health issues have very specific things in common. So they've got help and they've researched mental health issues to get a better understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the best place to find out more or get this help?
Okay. There is loads of stuff on the internet, but you do have to be careful where you're getting your info from, because you'll end up being extremely confused if you start. So the Mind website is a very good website to start looking on. There's loads of excellent articles on there about mental health. As I said, it's probably best not to surf the internet looking for answers, and they're not all helpful, the things that you read, because people will say things, don't take tablets, or you don't need counselling, or, you know, all sorts of stuff that are not helpful.
No. So how do you get help? Will everybody's starting points be different? So, I don't know, from the point of view of self-help, medication, counselling, how will you know what's best for you?
Mm. Well, I think the self-help route is a good one to start with, although you need to be careful you don't overwhelm yourself with too much information, as I already said, because that can result in you trying too many things and ending up completely confused about what works.
Yeah.
Go to a reputable website like Mind, and remember, what works for one person may not work for another. If self-help doesn't work, a visit to your GP is advisable, because they can refer you for counselling via the NHS. Unfortunately, it is a very long waiting list, so you may not get immediate help. And your doctor may suggest medication, and I wouldn't rule this out, as it can give you a much-needed respite while you're waiting to be seen. And taken alongside counselling, it can be beneficial. It doesn't mean you're going to be taking medication forever, although if you do find you have to, there's no shame in that either.
Mm.
Yeah, there's too much shaming going on in this world about lots of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Yeah, so there's a lot of shame about taking medication, but there really shouldn't be. Because in the treatment of mental health, one size does not fit all. And we may have to try different things before we find something that suits us. So you'll know what's working for you. And if that doesn't work, then you might have to try something else.
So sometimes it is just a case
I think,
of trial and error.
Finding out and educating yourself and seeing a counsellor. Like, you know, that's not singing my own song, but follow one path then.
Do you think the counselling route is kind of has more sustained results than maybe medication? Does it get to the root of an issue rather than I think, and I'm not running down medication at all, because I think that does have a vital role.
Well, I think, I think it's important to have them both alongside each other.
So sometimes because it's a combination.
Because when you stop taking the medication, if you haven't worked out what started it all off, then you may well go back to how it was before you had the medication.
So it's trying things in a logical order, really, isn't it? Until you find what works.
I'll be honest, counselling won't work for everybody.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're not ready for counselling.
Because I think research as well is important.
Mm.
Or maybe not research, maybe education.
Education,
rather than research. Because research, as you say, it comes with its own dangerous connotations.
I know I keep saying down a rabbit hole, but yeah.
Yeah, and talking to professionals. Because now I know my race against the dishwasher. Now that I know what that is, next time I go to do it, I'm going to say to myself, nope, we're not doing that anymore. Mm. We don't do that now. So
It'll take as long as it takes.
Yeah.
And I'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's really going to be very helpful.
I did have one thing on the end.
Oh, yeah.
Where I said about looking for awe in ordinary places. I'm not going to read this poem, but I'd love it if people had a little look at this really old poem called Leisure. I believe it was written in 1911, and I think he was a Welsh poet. You've probably heard it. The first line is, "What is this world if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare." Yeah, and there's lots of other verses. And sometimes when I'm on my walk, I do. There's a bench over in the woods in Massicummer with a little opening that looks right out onto the Black Tip, you know, which I think is beautiful, even if it is cool. And sometimes I just sit there and stay and don't rush. And yeah, he wrote that in 1911 because he thought life was too fast then in 1911. Wow. I know. And that if we were able to slow down now and again, our mental health might benefit. So I just wanted to reference that first sentence. But all the way through is we have no time. I think it's in every verse. Sweet. And I do think that's really, as you said, when you're feeling like, well, I got to work till 10 o'clock. Who's making you?
That's really poignant, isn't it?
Cheers.
I'm going to go and read that now.
It's a lovely poem. Some people might think it's cheesy, but I think it's lovely.
We try not to take our general health for granted. But do you think we should take that approach with our mental health as well?
Well, yeah, because our mental health impacts on our physical health.
Yeah.
Because when people are feeling depressed and anxious, they feel awful physically as well. And, you know, it is thought that that can lead to also, well, you know, muscle tension, headaches, lowering your immune system, all those things.
So it's looking out for the signs then that we discuss. Yeah.
Well, thank you once again, Mary, for a really, truly enlightening podcast. It's been lovely putting you through your paces and asking you the questions and coming up with some fabulous answers, and we have a better understanding on mental health issues and how it affects every single person. So I suppose if you're feeling overwhelmed, anxious, or perhaps not just yourself lately, struggling with your mental health, just please know that you are not alone. So I think there are many resources available, such as counselling and therapy and support groups, that can help you cope with your feelings and improve your mental well-being.